Wisconsin with Kristen Bry. Now, why would we play such a silly song if it were not for our next guest who was a mayor?
That is true.
Mm-hmm. You're now a radio show host going on 6 years.
It's hard to believe it's 6 years, but yes. And I was a mayor for 5 years. So this job now longer than the last job.
Wow.
And I got to compliment Jane because I do listen to your show.
Thank you.
Because it's on after my show. Well, sort of.
We have 1 hour of overlap.
Yes. I'll have to look on the impact on my ratings. But I appreciate the music that Jane plays. It's amazing.
She does a very, very good job.
Very talented, Jane Mattner. Oh,
thank you.
Well, we skipped the introduction, but Mr. Steve Scafidi is here all hour because we finally, like we said, we only have an hour that our show overlaps, and I wanted to get you on the show. I didn't know if there would be a conflict of interest because we're on two different stations now, but you're here, the person who I have to thank for all of my radio success.
Yeah, I don't know if that's true because eventually the talent shines and comes out, so I'll take some credit. And I just said this to somebody else. I said I was going on your show, and I said I'm looking for the next Kristen Bry, actually. So
that's good. You're always going to be looking out for people.
If you're an engaging young woman who wants to be on radio, seek me out.
But even if you don't know that you want to be on radio, because this is what I was saying as I was teeing up what we had on today's show, was when you contacted me, which was circa September, somewhere in September 2020, I didn't know. I wasn't thinking about radio at all. And now look
at me. But that's the cool part.
No, it is.
Because I find people that are interesting, and I just want to bring them on the show, and that you're one of those people.
So what was your origin story to becoming a radio show host? Because this was, unlike legendary Jane Mattner, who has been doing this her entire career in 40 years, went to broadcasting school, you had a completely different career before being a mayor of Oak Creek, and then you were mayor, and then this kind of just popped up for you?
Well, condensed version, I went to school for broadcast journalism.
You did?
But I didn't use it. I was recruited to then work in television on the research side. I did that for 28 years, retired, ran for mayor, won. We had a mass shooting, got a lot of media attention, and did a lot of interviews, was all over the place for a long time. And you learn how to work in that environment and to speak comfortably about things that you know, which is always a good tip. Don't speak about things you don't know, but talk about stuff you really do know well. That's the trick. And one day, Eric Bilstead, journalist, WTMJ, calls me between Christmas and New Year's. It would have been 2016. Hey, did you ever think about doing radio?
Out of the blue.
Yeah, well, this was Charlie Sykes. Remember, he had left, legendary broadcaster now on MSNBC. And I said, not really, but I'd love to come and do it. So I did like a dozen shows, and they eventually offered me the afternoons. So Wagner shifted to the morning, Jeff Wagner, and I did the afternoons. Then Jeff realized he didn't want to wake up early, so I got the mornings, and then 6 years passed. That's it.
And so, did you, when you first got invited to come on and it was a couple shows and it was testing the waters, did you know immediately that you liked it?
Yeah. I just did a speech to a group, the Optimist Club in Southern Milwaukee County a couple weeks ago. Anyone that invites me, I will go speak to their group. And they ask you that question. And it's an incredible feeling for me, maybe you feel differently. You have all these things in your brain you want to talk about. At least I do. And it's this incredible feeling of, I can get them all out there. Now, obviously, you got to structure it. You got to make it interesting. You know, the three E's, you know what they are, right?
Educate, engage, entertain.
Yes. That's my whole thing. Now, hopefully, I do all those three things. Sometimes you don't. You try your hardest. But so that was it for me. And once I started doing it, when I was on my own, because I started with Eric, we kind of teamed up. And that lasted for about 6 months. They said, you can do this on your own. And it was challenging, right? Because I hadn't worked in radio since I was in college, and the equipment was completely different. And you just realize that you love the dynamic. I always loved the conversation. Whatever job I had, that's like my only skill set. I mean, I'm handy, like, doing yard stuff and stuff. But my only skill set professionally is the back and forth. Yeah, back and forth, face to face. I mean, that's what I did in my earliest part of my career. Certainly that's what I did as mayor, and obviously I do it on the radio every day. I love that dynamic.
So with as you've developed your show, because I'm going to spend the whole hour trying to pick your brain for advice for this show.
Yeah,
as Jane and I are developing this show together, of finding the right balance between guests and monologue type, just getting the information out there, games, bits. And so how have you kind of developed your style or your voice over time over the last 6 years as balancing how much do you just feature what Steve thinks versus wanting to make sure you get a variety of different guests on versus leaving some room for some fun?
It's a great question, and it's really a hot button question now because some of the icons of talk radio, it was just all monologue.
Exactly.
And in some cases, still is. And I started to do that, and I will still do that on occasion, but I think for me, it's a mix of just what you said, guests. We do fun stuff. I do have Steve Rowe the World every Friday in the 11 o'clock hour, most Fridays. I love the guests. I love that interaction. I love meeting people. For example, I will have Tim Michaels on the show Friday, and I'll have Tony Evers on in the next week or so after that. That dynamic, the interesting thing for me is, although I feel a certain way about politics and really any issue, I'm interested in what other people have to say about it. Mm-hmm. So finding guests that bring it, you know, that's the cool part for me. So I can have internal conversations out loud on the radio. That is the most fun thing in the world for me. That's why I love it.
So when you are having your internal conversations out loud, how much do you go into a topic knowing where you're going to go, and how much do you, and not when you have a guest where you're, it's a back and forth, but when it's, I'm going to talk about, I know for a long time, especially we would talk about Gableman, which is for now kind of, we haven't heard anything from him for a couple of weeks now.
Yeah, that's a good thing.
Shocking. And you, especially when I think when it comes to our democracy and sanity, those are typically the topics that I hear you go off on, for lack of a better term. How much when you start do you know where you're going to go? Because for me, I still have, this is pulling the curtain back a little bit, I have like a seven to 10 page outline almost every day when I walk in here. Mostly because I don't want to get things wrong. So I want to be able to refer back to accurate information and the articles where I found the information. But I also wonder how much of that is me still not trusting myself of where I want to go in the moment.
Well, I mean, you say 7 to 10 pages. I started probably 5 pages. So that's okay. That's the lack of experience. And for the same reasons you did, you want to make sure you know what you're talking about. Mm-hmm. But I grew up listening to Larry King on the radio late at night. And I still do that on occasion. Larry's philosophy, he didn't read the books of the authors that came on the show. He wanted to be just fresh. He just wanted to just read from the person in the interview what they were going to say about it, how they're going to pitch the book to him. He didn't want to be tainted or colored by that reading of the book, which is kind of an interesting way to look at things. So for politics, for example, I know because of experience where the conversation is probably going to go. Mm-hmm. I know from experience and having talked to many of these people before, I know what they want to say. I try to find points of interest that are unique or a fresh take. And I hate that whole thing of takes, by the way. I'd rather have a smart take. Okay. That's my thing. It's actually my promo now. But it's just there's so many hot takes, and so many of them are stupid. I just want to have a fresh, interesting perspective with any guest I have on, whether it's political, the world of politics, or whatever it is, fresh perspective. So I come with it with a base of knowledge based on experience, limited reading of whatever they're doing, whatever they've done, and I approach it that way. So if I ran into somebody on the street, it would be very similar to that. The people that like my show like the conversational aspect of it. And that's what I try to bring.
All right.
Steve, how do you handle when you do have politicians on and you ask a specific question and they respond for a long time and don't answer your question? How many times?
Like all the time when we have politicians on?
Well, yeah. I mean, how many times do you call them on it? Because I think that for the audience and for me as an audience member sometimes, that's enormously frustrating.
Yeah, that reminds me of the phrase, let me ask it a different way. Because that at least tries to get back to what you asked them. I'm under no illusion that they're going to say something different because they come to my show or they come to politics with a set of ideals and standards and whatever.
Message training.
Yes, they know what they want to say. So I try to restate, and at the end of it, what I usually do in a wrap-up is I'll kind of give what I thought would have been a more nuanced response to that question.
Like after they leave?
Yeah.
A
monologue, perhaps. But to expect a politician to say what maybe we all think they're going to say or should say, I think is politically naive, first off. And two, one of the things that I do on my show, which people have criticized me for, you don't attack your guests. You don't go after your guests. I don't really think that's my job. I just want, if they have a point of view, I want to present it. Now, if they say something like, you know, Hitler wasn't really a bad guy or something stupid, obviously you're going to attack that. But when you're talking about ideologies or policies, sometimes letting them say it is all you have to do. I don't have to necessarily criticize it. They just said it. You can judge it for yourself. I always say on my show, I don't care who you vote for. I do not care who you vote for. I bring the guest, you can make a decision, and then it's up to you. And that's the way I approach it.
Well, and that's really interesting because, well, we haven't had a lot of experience of having Republican candidates on yet, but hopefully we will build those relationships after this. I mean, we're trying to build them now, but potentially in 2023, there'll be a little more oxygen for people to feel like this is a safe place for them to come on, because we definitely want, I feel like I got that from you as far as trying to invite lots of voices on that span the political spectrum. But it is interesting as far as what you said is the approach you want to take when you, what it, largely for politicians, but any high profile person. Because I was listening to a podcast with Kara Swisher, who is a notorious, started in tech reporting, but kind of does everything now. Mm-hmm. And she has said she doesn't care if she ever interviews someone again. She's going to ask the questions that she wants to ask. And if she doesn't interview again, fine. But, and it, she said, like, that makes me a better reporter if I lose my access to people. And so does that influence at all as far as wanting to make it a safe space for people to come back, that you feel like let them say what they're going to say and not necessarily challenge them on it?
Yeah. I mean, here's the thing. You can do that and you'll never have that guest again. I'll give you a real life example. Ron Johnson, Senator Ron Johnson. He used to be on my show all the time. Well, we had a little bit of an argument on the show. I've talked to him since off the air, but he's never been on my show again.
Yeah.
So what, I mean, what purpose did that serve?
That's a good question. So we're going to keep that conversation going because I think this is interesting as far as how to approach guests, and you can give me some advice on it since we're still growing. All right. Our guest for the entire hour is Mr. Steve Scafidi. Stick with us. This is going to be a very good conversation. This is As Goes Wisconsin.
Mayor. Mayor.
Wisconsin with Kristen Bry. Our guest all hour is my friend, former mayor, current talk show radio host, Steve Scafidi.
It's a pleasure to be here, but let me give you a compliment.
Okay.
So I've brought people on the show, many people, and some have stuck around.
Your show.
Yeah.
Because we're on my show right now.
Yes, and it's a weird, because I want to do stuff. You want to, like, you have a lot less buttons than I have.
A lot less buttons. I got a keyboard but a mouse.
Often people disappoint you, right? You know this even from real life.
Never meet your heroes.
Yeah, but you are somebody who is more interesting now than even when I met you, and you were interesting then, and that's the reason you came on the show. So keep that up.
Thanks.
And that's why you're great on radio, and that's why you'll be a success, is because you have that thing where it's curiosity, it's willingness to have fun, also be serious. You do a lot of homework on your show, and as you get better at it, or you're here longer, I should say, probably more experience, you don't have to do as much homework.
Mm-hmm.
You just do it.
You just remember it.
Yeah. You layer on experience. And that's the biggest thing about doing this. After a few years, you've talked to these people before. You there's no original questions left. You're going to go to the fresh stuff. That's what makes it interesting.
Well, thank you. I appreciate that sentiment. So speaking of questions, and we were talking about in the segment before, as far as interview styles. Now, since the get-go of starting your show, have you changed how you approach interviews, or has it always kind of stayed the same?
No, of course I have. I mean, at the beginning, I would get nervous. And I'm a person that in my life, I very, very rarely ever got nervous about anything. It wasn't in my DNA, and I still think it's a waste of time. But I would get nervous about the
next... I do think that's like a choice to get nervous.
Yeah.
You just used to regulate it?
That's how I felt about it. It made me mad. Like, what are you nervous at? It's not helping you in this situation. And that's how I look at it now. So when I show up on my show, I'm not nervous about anything. I mean, I've had the vice presidents on the show, many governors.
Which vice presidents did you have on?
Pence.
Oh, in person or on the phone?
On the phone.
Nice.
But I've had from left, who's the comedian on the left?
You did the show with Chelsea Handler, right?
Yeah, I did a live show with Chelsea Handler on stage at the PAC up in Appleton or Fox Valley, whatever that's called. And I've also had, of course, when I want to remember the names.
I know. You've already done your show today, so the brain might be like, why are we working right now?
You wash it out after the show. Anyway, I've had everybody. And going back to your original question, which was what? Refresh my memory now.
Have you changed or always the same?
Once I figured it out, I'm the same.
Okay.
But I had to figure it out.
So what did you have to figure out?
Be relaxed on the radio. Don't sweat all this stuff. Let the person talk because you have a tendency to want to overtalk.
Mm-hmm.
And, for some people that works. For me, if I can let the person express themselves and then react to it, that's got a lot more power, a lot more value, I think, as a listener. But, I still screw up. We all do. I mean, we make mistakes. You just have fun with it. And for me, the interviews and the guests are a big piece of that. I love having guests. I used to have a lot more. I actually have condensed it a bit. And I don't know if that's because I've had so many people on that I've kind of used them up.
Yeah.
But I used to have 7 guests per show. I mean, it was insane.
Well, we had 5 on Friday. And I'm still at the point where I like having guests because I don't necessarily love bloviating into the microphone.
Monologuing.
Okay. And maybe
no,
I'll get
bloviating
there.
Bloviating is a better word.
Jane calls you out, and I love that.
And I will. And I think Jane and I have a really good rapport and banter. But I've just loved this so much because really besides Republican candidates, so many people have said yes. Almost everyone I've asked, whether it's Aaron Nagler and J.R. Radcliffe and all these Packers guys who have, it's Monday. They have podcasts to put out or articles to put out, and they've said yes. I've had Tammy Baldwin on, in such a short period of time. We've had people come on the show who kind of felt like big asks, but once we get the schedule down, we'll come. And I've just had so much fun learning about ginseng farmers, and we're reaching out to a guy from the Cranberry Growers Association and stuff. And so I like that, but it's also that constant balance of what would I listen to versus what does most of the audience want to listen to?
Yeah, that's a tough one because, I'm curious about a lot of things, as are you. But is that interesting? Does it hit the 3 E's? I mean, you can always pile guests on top of your show. But here's the thing that my boss, Steve Wexler, and others have said. Do they add something? Do they bring something you don't know? Do you have curiosity about something they're experts at, subject matter experts or entertainers or whatever it is that makes the show more interesting? And I think that's part of the decision making.
Mm-hmm.
So I could have 10 guests, but again, at the end of the day, what did they add to the show? Give me 3 great guests, which is kind of your format. You have like a guest every hour, right?
The goal is 3.
Yeah.
And so sometimes if there's only 1, that's fine. It's days on Friday where there's 5. I think it's really fun because it's not like I do any less prep because I want to prep for what kind of questions I want to ask and know who I'm talking to and why we're talking. But I like having guests.
Yeah, and I think in many ways it makes the show more interesting and deeper for the audience. Like, oh, they had that guest on. I'm gonna tune in, or they're gonna have that guest on. So I'm always intrigued by the experience. I will say this though: at the beginning, just talking a lot on the radio makes you better at talking on the radio. So that part of it, that helps you get there. And I'm still not perfect. A long ways from perfect. There's people that just kind of fell into these jobs that are really good at it. We know these people, right?
Who fell into it that's just good at it besides me?
You want me to name names?
Well, if you're comfortable, I mean,
no, I'm not going to name names in the
Milwaukee
market.
Is that an insult to say you fell into it?
No, they're just so good at it, they could just step in on a mic and do a show.
Oh, I see.
That's what I'm saying.
Okay.
But there's other people like me that, even though I talked for a living in most of my prior jobs, doing this is a different kind of talking.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
And for us, I used to sit in a dark studio at Radio City, almost completely dark, except for the little bit of light that came through the window. And it's like a weird, eerie feeling. You have to learn not to talk to a person, but to talk to the universe.
Everyone.
Yeah. And it's on that station, it's a lot of people.
It is a lot of people. All right. Well, we're going to take our bottom of the hour break for the news. But Steve Scafidi will still be here when we come back. And because I want to talk about how you navigate partisanship and that talk and text line and the mean things that people say. And so when we come back, we will get into that. This is As Goes Wisconsin.
Mugs are hiding against the wall. Teacher mugs are hiding against the wall. We don't notice any time pass. We don't notice anything. We sit side by side in every class. Teacher thinks that I sound funny, but she likes the way you sing. Tonight I'll dream while I'm in bed when I'd sit alone
and watch your light.
Welcome back to As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry. Our guest this hour is Steve Scafidi. What does it feel like to be on my show?
It's weird. I want to push buttons. I want to talk first. I was told to respect this, that I'm not...
Who told you that?
My wife, Kathy. You have to, like, let... It's her show. You're a guest on her show. Well, you know my wife, Kathy, so that doesn't surprise you. But it's like, yeah, it's weird. It's like you want to jump in.
You can jump in.
Yeah, I'll try not. I'll maybe do it once, but.
Well, I'm interested in our next topic because one of the things I loved when I would come on your show and I thought was very unique is I am more left, you are more right. I am a millennial, you are a boomer. I am a woman, you are a man. And so in a lot of ways, there was a lot of differences, and yet we were such good friends, and I feel like we had fun with topics, but also could butt heads on things. And I feel like we were a good example of how conversations like this can go when you don't always agree, but you still appreciate each other.
You could disagree, but not like at the end of it, we're like mad at each other. Well, no, we just disagree on it. And we try to have fun with any topic that we did. And I love those Wednesdays, 11 o'clock hours, because they were unique. And one of the things I love about my show, and you probably like about your show, is your ability to craft a unique radio program. That's all you. It's all your power. And I work on that every week, and I'm constantly trying to evolve and find different things. But if we don't figure this out, this is the big political. Is this where you want to take me for a big political discussion?
Well, I think it's interesting because, yes, the bigger problem of polarization, partisanship, the fact that I feel like I've had so many down-ballot candidates who are knocking doors, having conversations in purple, if not red, districts. And ultimately, we mostly care about the same stuff when you take away the messaging around and like the scare tactics and the politicization of actually everyday problems. And so, but when we get on the talk and text line on a radio program, when we get into the comment sections on social media, it becomes these lacking of nuance clips of anger or resentment or glib. And I don't want to live in that world. It's so how, like, trying to.
What's the end game of that? Yeah. So we're told by some radio hosts that we're supposed to hate the other side, right? So the end game is we're going to walk around in a country or in this case, the state of Wisconsin, or the communities in southeast Wisconsin, where half the population we're not supposed to like. I know those people. I worked with those people. My wife's a liberal. I understand how that works. And do we have arguments about politics? Sure. We still do sometimes. But at the end of the day, I love her. So, mm-hmm. I mean, that shows an example. What is the end game of hating the other side? And to me, the end game is things are going to get a lot worse, a lot more violent, a lot more hate-filled. I don't want to live in that world, and I'm pretty sure you don't either. So let's not do that. So I have texters that always try to push me. I will read the text because I don't do it just because I want to be the guy that hears all sides. I want these people to know that I'm putting it out there because they said it. So you have to live with that result. If you said something hateful or mean or whatever it is, I'm gonna say it out loud on the radio. Live with it.
Yeah.
Yeah. You own it.
Steve, don't you agree though that there are some who are encouraging the divisions and encouraging the hatred and encouraging the use of violent rhetoric in political ads to fuel this? Because, and you and I talked about this a long time ago, I have never heard or read about more people who want to see and do harm to fellow Americans. And there are those that want that for their own political gains.
Yeah, you're exactly right. Look at the commercials that are running right now on your radios and TVs. It's despicable. They're painting the other side as the worst thing since Hitler. And I said
too, everyone's too radical.
Yeah, you know, just all these fake things, and it's such a disservice to those of us who like to think that we know the issues. We like to think we use common sense and logic, and yet we're embarrassed by these things. And yet I have people around me that say, that's a funny commercial. I'm like, really funny? Because to me, it's embarrassing as an American that's the level of service that we're, one, not getting in their real job, which is supposed to be working for us, but two, that's what they're bringing us in their ads, this weird, twisted reality where the other side is completely evil and we have the answers to everything. I've been in the public and private world in my previous life, and now I'm really in the public sphere. It is just maddening to me that we can't figure things out to the point where the idea is that the answer now is to just shun the other side, and that's whoever wins, and they get to do whatever they want.
I think that's a problem, especially now living in a purple, like the purplest state, basically. And what happens, and that the one side wins, and then they just push as much as they can through that just pleases their side. And I guess technically you could argue that on the federal level as well. Instead of actually understanding in a world where our electorate is so split, in a perfect world, it should be creating more compromise and collaboration where no one's really that happy, but at least we're not totally screwing the other side over. And not even the other side as far as the elected politicians, the other side as far as the other half of the constituents who are voting and their best interests and trying to make things better for everyone, especially when it comes to things that everyone cares about, whether it's healthcare and education and transportation and infrastructure and these things that just like help us do our lives better.
You serve the entire district, not just the people you voted for.
Yeah.
This has gotten so bad that elected officials at almost every level, if they get a hate-filled text or even a question from somebody who says, well, I'm not a fan of yours or whatever, they just ignore it.
I know.
Like it doesn't matter anymore that your constituents' opinion is not important enough. Look, this is partly the responsibility of the people we put in office, right? So we, and the voters, we have essentially, you use the term gerrymandering a lot. It's just the reality of the world we live in, because there's Democrat states and Republican states, whatever. We can argue forever about
there's
that.
There's some states that have started to figure it out.
I know. Like Iowa is one of them.
Michigan,
yeah. And maybe that's the way forward, hopefully, you know, whatever. But we have candidates in these districts that usually win by a landslide. Although Robin Voss is challenging that perception, isn't he?
Yeah.
But again, sometimes you're in the hopeful side of things. Sometimes your actions actually have real consequences for political figures. So maybe that's sort of that reality. Although the person that's running against him probably not any better.
I question, Steve, on what inroads you can make with people who don't believe in the basics, like gravity exists.
That's the thing that's maddening, right? How dare you tell me that? Everybody knows that's fake. And then I say on the radio, no, it's not fake. It's real. And I know you believe that. And you're trying to be, you know, sensitive to other people's thoughts, but it's just so stupid. And my Twitter, my little bio, they let you put, they say you can't fix stupid, but I try.
You do.
That's one of my goals.
Well, and I think when we think about the where we are with polarization and partisanship, and we think about solutions, I don't know how you get there without policy. Because I don't think we're going to, even as talk show hosts who have a platform who talk about these things, that becomes siloed as far as typically who's probably listening to me, who's listening to WTMJ, et cetera, who's listening to ISN and all the different radio stations that we have, at least in Southeast Wisconsin. And you, if that's what your habit is to tune in and listen there, that's where the filter you're getting things through. And so there's like the media side of things. But then I just come back to also what we can be doing on the actual politician side. And I just, like you said, the fact that both parties can get away with just saying, well, look how bad the other guys are, I'm better than them. Don't we need another option? Isn't this, how do we have 25 different pairs of like brands of jeans I can buy, and yet we only have two political parties to choose between?
So here's
in a capitalist society.
Right.
Free market, baby.
I don't wear blue jeans very often anymore, so I don't know if that would be...
You're very khaki today.
Yeah, I'm very khaki, yes. Here's the forward-thinking part of this. I have a lot of faith in young people. Now, I've been disappointed before, because if you'd have told me 10 years after the shooting in Oak Creek we'd have more hate crime, I would have said you're crazy. But so I have faith in young people that they understand. One, they've already kind of figured out diversity, I think, for the most part.
Oh, yeah.
So they figured that out.
It's all that woke indoctrination that's been in the schools, haven't you heard?
Yeah, well, I don't talk about that much, but I hear you. I hear you, and I respect your opinion.
Thank you.
But, I mean, so there's some optimism there. I think at some point in the next... And again, this is forward thinking, not 5 years, 20 to 25, a generation or more.
Okay. So my kids.
Your kids, I think, will grow up in a world where there are more than two major parties in the United States. I really, really believe that, because
I hope so.
If you're not being served by the two parties, and if you look at the approval ratings for Congress, my goodness, who does a job like that for that long with that level of approval or disapproval?
Disapproval.
Yeah. No one in the real world, that doesn't exist. You would be drummed out.
Well, and that, I think that's my frustration, is feeling like there has to be a better way than what we're doing. Because it also is getting to the point where, because you said the candidates that we're voting for and everything. Because I just feel like there's, and as someone who doesn't necessarily want to run, but has been asked to run. And how do you recruit good people who you want to vote for and then you're excited to have represent you versus, well, this is what we got, you know, especially in that down ballot. You know, I think the high profile nature of governor or U.S. senator or even Congress makes more sense as far as why you sometimes see people totally, for lack of a better term, jumping the line and going straight there versus, I think, historically starting in school boards and city council, then assembly or state senate. But those down ballot races and local government and state government matter a lot. And we have so many races that are unopposed. We have people who are maybe not the smartest people in the world who, because they're the only ones who are running, get elected. And then all of a sudden they have enormous amounts of power.
Now, you probably know some of the answer to this question, right? You know that if you get attacked, you get demonized just for running for office.
Yeah.
Everything's examined. And, you know, my life could be much different. If Paul Ryan retires earlier, I might be the congressman in the first congressional district. Because that was a real thing that I wanted to do. Somebody asked me today in an email, you should run for Congress. And I'm thinking to myself, one, I love my current job.
Mm-hmm.
And two, do I really want to jump back into that arena? I'd rather have the ability to influence, shape, communicate on the level that I get to do it. Without all the baggage. I've been a public servant. Even in my most popular days, which was most of my 5 years, we did well. We did a lot accomplished. There's a lot of people that didn't like me and still don't like me. So that in that reality, which was Oak Creek at the time, which was booming, even then there was hate and just mean-spirited stuff. Now, the trick that I used, and maybe this is valuable for radio, maybe it's not, no matter what the temperature was in the conversation, I would always try to dial it down. That has to do with my earlier life when I did a lot of stuff with TV and TV stations and networks. But there's always some common ground. You just have to be able to mine that common ground and actually find a sweet spot to make that go. So at the end, we might not agree, but at least we're talking. And often some of those troubled conversations or really tough conversations had some decent results down the line. Again, building for the future. So, I mean, there's a lot of tricks of the trade. The great thing about what you and I do is we have opportunity here, because I know you try to bring candidates on for both sides. I do bring candidates for both sides. And that is the value that I bring. It's a value add for talk radio, which has been dominated and still is to a great extent by people that are one-sided, biased, and often directing people to hate other people. I'm never going to be a part of that, ever.
You heard it here first.
It's like a political speech there. I just monologued.
You're just getting fired up. Steve Scafidi. Well, we only have like a minute and a half, but so it's like it's not enough time to ask you a question.
Well, ask me something fun then.
What did you think of the Packer game?
Well, here's my thing. That's not a 1 minute answer. But
that's
I'll give
not
you
a 1 minute answer. What word, if you had one
disappointed.
Word.
Disappointed.
For the game or the season?
Both.
Okay.
Because they have too much talent, and they've wasted it over the last 10 years. Incredible seasons that just got thrown away like they were nothing. Twice at home in the last, 2 years. It's just disappointed. It's frustrating. And so, but the cool thing is I've managed my expectations. So after the game, I went outside and did something.
You didn't put your foot through the TV?
No, I didn't yell once. Even I could have yelled many times, and I didn't raise my voice. I went outside and had fun.
All right. Well, we have one more segment with Steve Scafidi. He will still be here when we come back. This is As Goes Wisconsin. To As Goes Wisconsin with Kristen Bry. Our guest this hour has been and will be for the next 8 minutes, Steve Scafidi.
That hour went fast. I say that because I know they go fast.
I knew that this hour would go fast as I was prepping for today's show. I said, well, he and I have done this plenty of times.
Yes.
I have no worry that we will be able to fill an hour of radio together.
We never stop talking. It's like never, just looking at each other. Like, no, we always seem to have the conversation.
Like, ooh, this is awkward.
No, we never have
that. Nothing to say to you right now.
Yeah. I could do 3 hours, actually. So
probably. I don't just, want like, to stick around.
My voice is going, and I'm getting tired, and I need to start thinking about my show tomorrow.
Oh, yeah. Jane, did you have a question? Oh.
There are so many things I want to ask.
I was going to say, the microphone was so close to your face that I was like, I think she has something to say.
Yeah. Again, I go back to having guests on that say such a blatant falsehood that you have to correct them, and taking the chance to correct that and then being punished by never having them back on again.
Yeah, I'm obviously, if it's something as serious as a hate-filled rant about some stupid thing they say that's completely wrong, I'm going to challenge them on it. But there's a lot of nuance in policy, right? I mean, I think there is. And, you know, whether someone believes in free health care for all or someone says, I'm not a big fan of that, I have to let them say what they think. Now, obviously, if they're saying things that are completely outright false, I'm going to challenge them on it.
So here's a question. Mm-hmm. In the few minutes that we have that I probably could have started with, and it would have been an entire 15-minute segment by itself, I was irritated by Michael's narrative around the lazy class of people that were created during COVID. Because when you look at the numbers, we have less people collecting unemployment now than we did under Walker or in the fall before COVID. There's less total unemployed. And there's all these other issues as far as more people retiring, parents, largely women, not going back to the workforce. And so to propel, that feels like an opportunity if he was on my show where mm-hmm. I would want to be like, where are you getting these numbers from that there's like a class of lazy people? And so
that's a lazy talking point that he used. Yeah, I would say, come on. We have low unemployment. There's a lot of people that want jobs. I mean, does everybody want to line up for a $7.25 an hour job? No. But if you pay them $12, there might be a long line.
Mm-hmm.
So we have to match that. I would ask more of him than just what's your thoughts about that. I mean, that's pretty shallow. But, I mean, that's what they do, right?
Yeah. Well,
they'll lull you to sleep with that stuff.
The structure of the debates, not to go, but to rehash that, is when you only have a minute, how deep of an answer are you actually looking for?
And the answer is not at all. It's going to be talking points, which is why I don't like those debates. They're not really informational. They're more fodder for radio talk shows than anything
else. Well, then I asked Jesse O'Poyan, who was here on Friday, this question. Big fan of Jesse. What would you, besides political ads, which is how most of us get to know candidates because we're inundated with them. And if you don't like debates, what are the other options on a high-level statewide campaign to get to know a candidate?
A couple things you can do. One, go to their website, right?
Okay.
Even though that's obviously going to be talking points. Sometimes there's a little more detail there than you think. So that's one. You can at least see what their official positions are from their campaign, from the candidate, on whatever you're talking about, abortion down to economic policy, whatever that is. The great thing about the internet, you can go find speeches that these people have made. Now, obviously, the audience somewhat dictates what you're going to talk about, but this is often a candidate's 30 minutes, 45 minutes, speaking uninterrupted about a specific thing. It's not edited. It's just what they said. So if you want to spend the time and know what these people think, find these things on YouTube or wherever, you know, whatever the Google search points you, and go listen to them. Now, that requires an investment of time.
Mm-hmm.
If they're appearing in person, go see them. Hear what they have to say. Now, they're probably going to spout more talking points, but every once in a while, depending on the race, you might have a moment or two to interact with these people. Ask them a question. See what they say to your face. And here's an easy check. If what they say to your face is different than what's on their website, you might want to have a second thought about voting for that person. Easy fact check. You just did it on your own. Requires investment of time. I don't want to criticize people, but they often just accept what people on the radio, people on the TV say as this is what it is. And that's not
well, there's the confirmation bias.
We're entertainers in a lot of respects.
Steve, with so much money in politics now, since Citizens United, and nobody knows where it's coming from, it can be coming from anywhere. I realize there are some restrictions on who can donate how much, but wouldn't it be easier if they were just like NASCAR cars and they had to have patches from all their buyers on them?
That would be easier, wouldn't it?
Yes.
Yeah, I mean, politics is so influenced by money now, and it's often not our money. It's billionaires' money.
Yeah.
I've gotten in trouble for saying this. I don't know why anyone donates to campaigns anymore. Why would you?
Why would you get in trouble for saying that?
Because people get mad. You're telling people they shouldn't get involved. I'm not saying that. Do all the other stuff. Just don't give them money. They're going to waste it on dumb commercials. Truly dumb commercials. And if your sole appreciation of election commercials, campaign commercials, is it's funny, you're doing politics wrong.
It's just funny. I don't feel like I've seen any funny campaigns.
It's like
I wish they were funnier.
It's a twisted version of funny. It's like so obscenely false that it's like humorous.
Like the Utah woman rapper?
Sick Burn.
Yeah, exactly. It's just it's gotten to the point where they're almost going to say, my opponent's going to choke your baby in its sleep. That's where we're at now. It's so extreme and so stupid. Should I have said that on the radio? Probably
not. No, you totally could, but I was just, my mind went in so many different ways as far as, because literally Mike, husband Mike, yesterday said something about, he was joking about something, and he joked about eating fresh babies.
Yeah.
There's a fresh baby, let's eat it.
Yeah,
and I was like, where's all this baby violence coming from?
It's like, that's how extreme it is. They will literally grab your baby and rip it from you.
Well, the truth is, you've met more of these people than I have, and I am such an optimist that I want to believe that even people who I disagree with who have chosen to be in these positions of power, at least in their brain, think that they're making things better. And I know that I've gotten old enough that even when I want to be an optimist, that some people just want to be powerful, and I get that. And there's certain things you have to do to stay in power. But I do think there are people who get involved, especially at local and state level, who really do want to solve problems. And I don't know if it's the political parties that get in the way. I don't know if it's the way our structure and our system isn't getting in the way. But I still believe in most people are good.
Most citizens are good. Most elected officials at the beginning of their careers are good. They are, it's almost like the Matrix. There's something, they just wire them, and then they're just crazy people that spout party politics.
So term limits?
Yeah, but the people that vote on that are the guys and women that we're talking about.
They vote themselves out of a job.
Because they're not going to change. It's like, I'm going to take less money for my job, even though I only work 3 months.
They always vote themselves raises.
Right, exactly. And they work less with more money.
Well, I think Steve and I are going to continue to talk.
We
just won't be on the air.
Yeah,
we can keep it going. Steve Scavini, thank you so much for spending an hour on my show with me.
Always great to see you.
Well, that's about going to do it for us on As Goes Wisconsin. We'll be back tomorrow to do it all again.